Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout podcast, where two bitter film fans watch the best and worst horror movies of all time. My name is Luke Condover Kate, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr.
Ben Arrington.
I was salivaring, slobbering when I was trying to say that.
My regular co-host, Mr. Ben Arrington. There's no S's in Ben Arrington, you're lucky.
Man, how are you? How's your mouth?
I'm good. My mouth's alright. It's pretty dry, but I've got a beverage here ready to... A big old cup of coffee. What about you? How are you?
Yeah, it's pretty wet, like I said before. But other than that, man, I'm all right. Ugh. I think it's been a bit of a busy weekend. Everyone's watching horror movies every day. Everyone's doing like, what do they call it? 31 yep. days of Halloween, which is insane. I can't keep up. I've done four.
Oh, you've done four horror movies.
Wow, I'm counting the Joker as well. That's sort of a horror movie.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's got some horror movie elements.
October snuck up on me. I think if I thought about it a little bit more, maybe I would have done that. But it really did sneak up. It came out of nowhere. Mm. I was like, bloody hell, is it?
It went boo.
Jesus. It went boo. So this is officially the first episode of October, first horror hangout of Halloween month. Currently, we don't have anything really special planned for Halloween on Horror Hangout, do we?
No. Maybe we should just watch, do like a watch along sort of thing.
What did we do last year? Was this last year when we did the quiz?
Maybe.
So
whole year's gone by. This whole year's gone by.
Maybe. I think it was the quiz. If we do another quiz episode, I was going to put this to you. Hmm. As the champion, I think I should possibly be challenged.
About that.
By someone else. So possibly. If Andy wants to take me on, but he's a pretty good quiz master.
He's a good quiz master. That would be the big concern. I don't think I could challenge him as a quiz master. Unless we do 50 rounds of the name game. It's like 50 horror movies and they've all got different names. I don't know. We'll work out something.
There was a little bit of talk from the Valkyries podcast on Twitter.
Yeah.
That they were going to take us on. So maybe I could challenge Heather from the Valkyries podcast to see if she wants to. But then if someone comes onto our podcast and beats us on our podcast, is that not the ultimate disrespect? We look like idiots. Is that?
I just won't publish it. I'll edit it. I'll make it so their voice comes out your mouth.
You put a voice on? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I'm pretty confident anyway. I'm pretty confident I'll win. That might sound cocky to you, and the truth is it is cocky, yeah. Why not?
I'll feed you the answers. Send you
please.
Cakes.
That'd be good. Send me texts. You can send me texts while it happens.
I don't know if I can text. Can people still text on phones? I mean, a message, Facebook message. Yeah, okay. Man. Have you got any news?
Oh my god, no, I haven't got any. Do you know what? I haven't got any news. I didn't plan any news. Sent me that out of left field.
I guess I could throw one in there.
Go ahead.
So, every now and again, Joe Bob Briggs does his like movie marathons on Shudder. He's doing. Yep. He's just announced a Halloween Hootenanny, and he said if you plan to watch Halloween this year, maybe don't watch it just yet because he's probably going to do a big thing about it on his streaming thing. But they're always really good, and like people go on Twitter and they sort of follow along and watch along, and everyone's chatting to each other about what's going to yep. come up next, and like they talk about the film. It's a really good. It's a nice way to be a part of a community of horror movie watching whilst sat in your pants in your living room or in your bedroom, wherever you want to do it. But
I mean, yeah, it's the best way to be, isn't it? You yeah, can't exactly. do it out and about anymore. People frown upon it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
But is that, like, I guess that's some news, isn't it?
That's some news, yeah. That is a bit of news. I don't know if there's been anything major dropping. I know I did see recently that Ghostbusters for the 35th anniversary is going to be back in theatres from October the 6th through yesterday.
I watched it yesterday.
Oh, you did?
It's on my stuff list. Yeah, I went to watch the 35th anniversary screening of Ghostbusters yesterday.
You went to the cinema?
Yeah. Yeah.
What cinema did you go to?
Mansfield Odeon.
Oh, man.
There's a guy Jesus. There dressed as Venkman in his, like, you know, his get-up, the backpack and everything.
Yeah.
It was cool. They had, there's quite a lot of people there. And there's a lot of, like, adults, maybe about my our age sort of thing, taking their little kids to see Ghostbusters, I think, to sort of share the experience. So that was kind of nice. And there's like, it's kind of, I was kind of sad as well, because before the film starts, it has Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd and everyone, Sigourney Weaver, talking about the film. And they were talking about how they stole shots from New York, which, like, they didn't have permission. They, you know, in all the scenes of the car.
Yeah.
They said they had the siren on and the police never stopped them because they just kind of assumed they were like the Coast Guard or some random official thing. But like, it made me really sad because it's like that version of New York doesn't really exist anymore. And those sort of films about New York don't really exist. I mean, maybe it never did. Maybe it's just all in our mind from the 80s.
Yeah. That's 80s kind of movies. The way that I pictured New York. Like growing up, that's why like I sort of became mildly obsessed with like the idea of going to New York when I was a kid was because every single cinematic, you know,
and Friends as well,
just looked amazing. Friends, and then Ghostbusters, and Home Alone 2, and Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2, and that was a bit later on. But just this magic, even like Coming to America, which like is set in Queens mostly. I kind of became like obsessed with just the cinematic version of New York. I think it's magical, mate.
Yeah, it's sad that it doesn't really. I mean, I've never been to New York actually, and I still want to go. But from what I hear, it's not quite that what we kind of grew up thinking. Like, it's more like, you know, because the big cities now, they're always so expensive. People don't tend to live in central parts of these cities anymore.
Mm. Yeah, I know what you mean. So just check in. It looks like Ghostbusters isn't showing near me until like Halloween week.
Well, so, I definitely recommend it. The film itself is amazing. Like, it holds up really well.
It's one of my favorites. It's definitely solidly in my top five, which is usually chock-a-block with stuff that I watched when I was a kid. Just can't help that nostalgia trip.
Just Bill Murray. Just so funny. And just like the relationship between all of them. It's just like magic. And Rick Moranis, watching him like do Rick his Moranis, thing, like he's so funny. Like the way he can sort of his voice just cracks at like the perfect moment just to get an extra little gag in there somewhere, or the way he locks himself out of his apartment all the time, or I don't know. He's just such a funny guy. I don't know so much about why he retired.
I think what's different about, I know we discussed this before, but it's generally scary, that film.
Yeah,
there's generally like scary moments, and you really do feel the tension. Like, I mean, the soundtrack when things start kicking off towards the end, and all the ghosts get out, it's legitimately terrifying. Like, and Sigourney Weaver's performance and her voice is scary. I was even scared of the Marshmallow Man. You know?
Yeah.
He looks Zool. Big and cuddly, but he's got angry face.
Goes there.
Zool's blade terrifying. I mean, that is a
aim for the flat top. I was watching the bit where the dog comes out and chases. okay, who brought a dog? And it sort of chases Rick Moranis. There's some younger people, teenagers, kind of laughing at the effects of it. It's got that kind of stop motion, claymation thing going on to it. But I was like, it still kind of works for me because it did all the way back when I was a kid. Like, it still holds that kind of. And the music as well, like the menacing orchestral music, it just works so well. And it juxtaposes with like the New York comedy sort of rom-com style elements there as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just a great film.
Yeah, I agree. It's a wonderful, wonderful film. Any other news? Is that it? I know I did want to mention that this kind of, I don't know if you knew about this, but did you know that there was a new Doom film that kind of dropped out of nowhere? Not like a...
Yeah, because I heard someone say it was all right. Cinemas. I heard someone say it was pretty good. Yeah, so not good.
But, so I've heard it's maybe all right. Some of the creature stuff is okay. I don't think the performances are going to blow anyone's mind. It's been all a B movie. Doom Annihilation takes place at some point in some time. So that, I know very little about it. But I'll just say I'll probably watch that this week.
What is it on? What is it on? Netflix or something?
Sure what it's on, actually. It's not on Netflix. So it didn't release in cinemas, did it? So maybe, I'm not sure what it released on.
So a lot of cool stuff coming out from the film festivals. They're all playing Richard Stanley's Colour Out of Space. Apparently it's pretty good, which I'll be honest, I just wasn't expecting it because Richard Stanley did Hardware, which was all right. I mean, it's kind of low budget and it had a lot of cool stuff going for it, but I don't think it was a great film. And then he did There was a whole thing with Island of Dr. Moreau, which kind of went AWOL.
So this is H.P. Lovecraft story, right? Yeah.
And then he hasn't made it. He disappeared. He sort of lived in Africa for a while, and for years, like I think 20 years or something. He's come out of nowhere, and Elijah Wood's production company has produced this film, Cut Out of Space, and apparently it's great. Apparently it's like fantastic. Oh, so
Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it.
Great. Yeah, very exciting. This is good. And what else is due to come out? So, not sure if this... Well, I guess it kind of falls into the horror thing slightly, but it's a Zombieland sequel. Do you think we need a Zombieland sequel 10 years later?
Are we going to? I keep seeing the trailers, and I'm not that interested.
I don't feel that interested, but I would consider Zombieland as a genuine enjoy.
Yeah.
So... It almost, you know, it's probably 10 years later, but it doesn't look like they've done anything to suggest it's 10 years later. They've literally just gone, it's pretty much just the same film, you know. Everyone's still wearing the same clothes, saying the same things. No one's depressed by the fact that they've been living in a zombie apocalypse all this time. Everyone's still quipping.
Never gonna stop quipping.
Never gonna stop quipping. Can't stop quipping. Oh my god.
Kill me.
Yeah. So that's that. Anything else on your stuff on the gufferoos for this week?
Yeah, I watched Happy Death Day. It landed on Netflix.
Oh yeah, okay.
And I know a lot of people really
like Netflix. They're both on Netflix, right? Are they both on Netflix?
I don't know.
One and two.
I hope so. Actually, I'd watch the second one.
What do you know, Luke?
I thought I watched the first one, and I watched it with Kat. And Kat doesn't like horror movies really. She likes some, but this one I thought like it's not going to be overly scary. It'll be all right for her.
Yep.
But I mean, Kat got really scared at Riverdale, so this was a little bit scary for her. But she enjoyed it.
Just from how bad it was.
But it's Groundhog Day meets Scream. That's the sort of the best way I can picture.
Yeah.
And it's fun. It's like really well done. Like it's exactly what it says in the tin. It's solid. Yeah. Like, and you can't really complain about any of it. It's just, and the lead actress is really good in it. Carries the film really well. And then I watched Tigers Are Not Afraid. Have you seen this one?
Both of those are films that I haven't seen that I would like to see, but I've heard good things about Tigers Are Not Afraid. It's on Shudder, is that correct?
It is, yeah. And it's great. I think it's for some people it's going to be like fantastic, but for me it was just great. Like it's kind of in the same genre as Devil's Backbone and Pan's Labyrinth, sort of dark fantasy with kids and war zones and horrible adult stuff, but it's so it's takes place in Brazil. Apparently there's a point in time where big portions of cities were sort of becoming abandoned, and there's just kids that unaccounted for, tons of kids that just no one knows what happened to them. So it's about these kids sort of living in this sort of environment, and then there's a whole fairy tale aspect that comes into it, where a girl gets three wishes, and the wishes turn out to be the kind of wishes where they're kind of twisted a little bit to what you think you're gonna get. But yeah, it's it was definitely worth watching. Great soundtrack as well.
Wow, nice. Quite low budget, is that right? I've heard it's quite low budget, so it's good.
Actually, it didn't seem that low budget. At no point did I think, "Ooh, that's a bit janky."
I thought it was just quite a small release, but maybe I've
So one other thing, one other thing I quickly mentioned is the Creepshow TV show, which is Greg Nicotero is brought back, based on the old classic film from the 80s, and it's all right. It's not amazing. So the first, obviously, one episode.
I'm still listening. I'm just derobing.
Okay.
Keep going.
So I've only watched the first episode, and there's two stories. Oop, there he goes. The first one is based on Stephen King's short story called Grey Matter, and it's good. It had Tobin Bell and the guy from Breaking Bad who plays the drug dealer. I can't remember his name now.
Gus.
Yeah.
Name's Gus, but I don't know what his real name is.
And Adrian Barbeau in it. It was all right. It seemed a little bit cheap, and the endings for both of these stories in this first episode just didn't seem to land. Like, it just seemed to not quite know how to finish the story. The second story was based on a Josh Malerman short story called The House in the Head or something like that. And it's got loads of good bits. Like, it's a doll's house, and then the doll's house becomes haunted. This little girl finds a little head, a zombie head, like a voodoo zombie head, in the doll's house, and every time she looks back at the doll's house, more of this haunting situation sort of developed. So it's got the adults looking, like, she'll look back at the doll's house and the adults are going up into the attic in the doll's house, and then she'll look back again, and then the kid will be scared, but they don't know, like, looking at some corner of the room, you don't know why, and it's all right. It's a really cool concept, but it just kind of falls flat at the end.
Where did you watch this?
It's on Shudder as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Interesting. Interesting indeed.
Yeah. What about you?
Well, I guess, I mean, I saw Child's Play, so the remake, reimagining of the original. I think it does well to, like, craft its own identity. I just don't think it's an identity that's, like, that great. It's got a few like fairly interesting spins and satisfying kills, but it hasn't got the humor, obviously, of the original Child's Play, and it doesn't quite hit the mark. They've really taken some liberties in terms of what they've done with the mythology of the character, and, you know, explaining that. And it's got Audrey Plaza in it, and I think she's awesome in everything she's in, but she's so underutilized. They've literally made her, like, so, like, just like one, pretty much just like one dimensional, which is pretty naff considering it's her. You know, I was kind of expecting at least one of five or six things from it with her involved. But no. That was that. And apart from that, I've not watched all that much else apart from a film that we both saw.
Oh, yeah, Joker. Yeah.
Both saw Joker, mate, didn't we? Both bloody Joker.
So, I mean, we probably don't want to go into too much into the politics or whatever and the uproar, but I don't think it's warranted. It just seems like a cool comic book movie to me. No point do I feel like it's trying to revolutionize incels or whatever the controversy is.
So, I mean, I'll briefly touch on the criticisms only because it seems like it's just another one of those things, you know, films have received criticism like this for decades. Films that have different vibe, like Taxi Driver had it. You know, we've probably had every couple of years there's a film that kind of gets this. And obviously, we've already discussed The Hunt getting pulled completely.
Yeah,
it kind of like touches a nerve of, like, the current political social climate, and people kind of feel the need to almost blame it for for certain things rather than taking a step back and thinking, you know, if people aren't committing any acts or act in a certain way because of art, and if they are, it's such a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of that audience that it's almost, it's just totally ridiculous and pointless to even try and create some sort of narrative that that films like this are to blame, especially when things like John Wick and Deadpool and things which have got an abundance of violence in it, because it doesn't quite take itself seriously. It's not kind of thought of as being bad, but because someone's experiencing, you know, essentially.
But even this, I don't feel like they're taking the political side of it seriously. Do you know what I mean? I still feel like they're just playing into the, they're still playing with toys in a way. I don't feel like what's the name of the director?
Todd Phillips.
I don't think Todd Phillips was trying to make a point. Do you?
I don't think so. And it's a bit weird because anything I've read from the director, he doesn't strike me as the kind of person, like after watching this film, I mean, I was pretty blown away by this film, but you know, when you're blown away by a film, but you kind of, you read about what the director's talk says about it and you kind of go,
yeah,
I don't know if I'm buying into that.
We said a few things about like woke culture and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And it almost feels like it's just an incendiary thing to say because, you know, that's not the case at all, is it? I mean, it's not. Said about what woke culture basically killing comedy, and this is like, no, that's just not true. And maybe it's an incendiary thing to say to get more people, more butts in seats for this, but so brushing all that to the side, which I think you need to do with this, it's unfortunate because I honestly think it's one of the best individual performances I've seen from not just Joaquin Phoenix but from anybody in the last couple of years, like, considering he's pretty much the film's centered entirely around him. Even sort of other side characters are, there's no other major actors in it really, is there, apart from people having really small roles. I know Zazie Beetts is in it, but she's not got a huge role. And
Robert De Niro, I think, but he's, it's more like
of course,
figurehead really rather than an actual character.
Yeah. Exactly, but I kind of mean, there's not other characters that are interwoven into the story, and people aren't integral to this story, other characters. It does really feel like really character-driven film. But yeah, I was just fully captivated by it, like for the duration, really. And I think the soundtrack was great.
I think that last half an hour, well, there's a couple of bits that like I have to watch through my fingers. And it's the same with The King of Comedy, which this takes a lot from.
Yeah, of course.
The violence stuff is kind of, there's bits where he's like hunting people down with the pistol, like this gun. And they're kind of like horrific in a sort of, this is kind of quite real. But the bits that I found really horrific were like when he's doing stand-up comedy. Like those kind of bits where you kind of feel like, what's going to happen? And especially when he goes on TV, it genuinely felt like, I don't know what's going to happen here. And I'm kind of, my heart rate was going.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely of the opinion that this character doesn't and never has needed a backstory.
Yeah.
Even in The Killing Joke, which is obviously one of the best Batman stories, I kind of take it with a pinch of salt and I think, yeah, this may have been his origin story, but I feel like I don't need to know. So I'm kind of watching this, it's almost like, it reminds me of one of those what if stories.
Yeah, yeah.
When it comes to these sort of characters. But and it's just giving him obviously all the stuff to do with like mental health and mental health funding being cut and political unrest and the social climate and Gotham City. You know, Gotham City for once in a film set in Gotham City, it didn't feel like we focused too much on Gotham City. It was constantly there as that tension in the background. But I don't think the violence is gratuitous, as I've heard sort of it mentioned. And I think
there's a really good violent bit there. There's a really good violent scene. I was just gonna say it's one of the best comic book movies. Like, I just think it's, when I think of all the comic book movies ever made, I think it's up there. It's one of the top ones.
It is really captured, you know, some of that really dark nihilism of Joker. From the page in a way that I don't want to say that we haven't seen before, because we've seen it differently and just as good. With Heath Ledger. I kind of feel sorry for Jared Leto, because I think if he was given an opportunity like this, he probably would have done just as well.
Yeah.
But obviously, like, imagine if roles were reversed. Just imagine that for a second.
I can't imagine Joaquin Phoenix, like, go play.
Can you imagine it?
Yeah.
That'd be fantastic. But I wonder how Jared Leto feels. As I said, I feel a bit sorry for him because it's got to be an actor's dream to be able to portray a character like this. A character is so well known by people. Because obviously, with Travis Bickle, he was an original character. So that's.
I think that would be like one of the big complaints for this is that it's just a little bit too by the numbers in terms of the sort of the shots that have been sort of stolen from 70s cinema. Even like the bit at the end with the sort of the network speech, which I thought was really good, but it kind of.
Maybe we need to. We are spoiling Joker for anyone. If anyone wants to skip ahead a few minutes.
I'll put spoilers in the show title.
We're kind of spoiling it, but we're not. But I mean, maybe the next thing I'm going to say is it can be considered a spoiler. Minor criticisms for me would be that by the time the makeup is donned, I don't think like there weren't that many different mannerisms that he brought forward. He was very much Arthur Fleck in the makeup. I expected a little bit more theater and maybe a bit more bravado, a bit more confidence that would have come with this new persona. But when he sort of sat down in the chair, he would kind of still reflect.
Okay, so we're deep in spoilers now, but as he's about to be brought out onto stage and he had this whole thing planned, but then his body kind of contorts in this weird way, I kind of felt like that was him becoming, that was his final transformation scene.
Well, when he kind of goes like this, just kind of puts his arms out before, as the curtains were opening. I mean, it's great. I mean, there's no other way of looking at it. I think if you're a comic book fan, yes. But you don't have to be a comic book fan to enjoy it. It's a very good character-driven character study.
You know, if it was done, what did people in your cinema say? Did you get any sort of?
No, I didn't hear much. Okay. I think I heard someone say that was weird.
Okay.
Because I guess if you're going into something like that, you've got expectations. You've seen Joker portrayed in so many different ways.
Yeah.
You kind of expect one thing or another. You don't really expect to, I guess, sympathize or understand this character's plight. But at the same point, I don't think you sympathize with him enough. You know when he goes too far.
So there's a person... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's a person to my left that was like, well, he ain't no Heath Ledger, is he? And then there's a person to my right.
Someone literally just say that.
Someone said that. And someone to my right, as I was walking out, said, that was the best performance I've ever seen in my life. I was like, wow, okay. So like... It's all about Joaquin Phoenix's performance. Oh, no one even saw the film.
There were really, really, there were some bits. I mean, it's hard to compare because The Dark Knight wasn't a film led by the Joker. The Joker was in that film, but it wasn't about the Joker.
Yeah.
So it's hard to compare the performances because, I mean, how many minutes of screen time Heath Ledger probably got in comparison to this? You know, it's minuscule. Yeah. So it's really difficult to compare. It's like you wouldn't go, well, Jared Leto was better than a.
So I do have a couple of complaints. One is, I preferred all the bits that weren't so comic booky, in the sense that when it seemed the comic book stuff seemed to be, references seemed to be shoved in there a little bit too much. And I kind of felt like it was more natural before he went to Wayne Manor and before all those kind of bits. And also, the Gary Glitter song. It seemed really like anticlimactic. It seems to be building up to that bit when he goes down the stairs, and that song didn't seem to quite work. Not in the way the rest of the
soundtrack should have just been the score.
Yeah,
because the Gary Glitter song is there, and then it kind of dips into the soundtrack, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it should have been the soundtrack. The score. It should have been the score because the score was like
the deep ominous sort of
deep ominous, and then he's dancing in this way. When he was dancing to Gary Glitter, almost, do you know what I mean? It was like...
It looked like an advert for something.
Do you know what I mean? It did look like
an advert for chewing gum or something. Yeah.
But that just goes to show, like, that something as simple as, like, the music choice can completely turn a scene on its head.
I saw that and I thought, I don't understand, this music's not quite working for me. It didn't seem to work. I don't know, it seemed like a misstep to me. But it's a great film. We definitely recommend it.
Considering the artist as well, you know what I mean? Like if you're gonna make a bad choice.
I think they must have said they must have done that as some knowing wink. It's kind of gross, really, but
it's a gross knowing wink. And also, but how well known is this guy in the US? You know what I mean?
Maybe they didn't know. That's
a great piece of music.
Something about the intentions of the guy's voice. It just really resonates with this film.
Yeah, great. And then for the final credits, we're gonna have Lost Prophets.
Jesus.
Just for the fun. I was about to sing Lost Prophet's song then, but, you know, it might be bad taste.
Yeah, I don't listen to Lost Prophet's anymore, but every now and again, I'll put, like, Last Train Home on or something. Because I feel like, apart from Ian Watkins, the other guys were all right. I mean, yeah. We don't know, said, but...
Yeah. I've been out, like, at a pub, and it's been played before. And it's kind of like, that's you don't...
That's a bit weird, yeah.
Just don't know how to feel, so I kind of just go to the toilet, have a long wee, and then come back out and it's done.
How come Ben goes to the toilet every time Lost Prophet's plays?
Don't know. You have to ask him when he comes out.
Okay, so other than that, did you see anything else?
No, that was it, really. That was it. Yeah.
Cool. Other than Ready or Not, which I actually saw like 5 weeks ago, I think, now. Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
I don't know. Maybe it's not that long.
No. You saw it a lot longer ago than I did. So
okay.
I saw it maybe at the end of September.
So Ready or Not? Have you got
Ready
some
or Not
information?
So yes. Ready or Not. It's a 2019 American black comedy horror directed by Matt Bettinelli-Olpin and Tyler Gillett. The film stars Samara Weaving as a newlywed who becomes hunted by her spouse's family as part of a wedding night ritual. Got some other people in it, like Adam Brody, Andy McDowell.
Yeah, it's quite a cool scene.
Yeah, and there's Mark O'Brien, Henry Cherney.
This film got some decent buzz, I think, out of the gate. I think Stephen King tweeted about it. 88% Rotten Tomatoes critic score, 78% user score. But, odds there, 7.1 IMDb. I think I was expecting like a good film, but there's some great. It's a lot of fun. Like it was just a really good time at the cinema. Like everyone was like laughing in my theater. Then about you, people were
at the cinema
having a great time.
Oh, yeah, definitely had some laughs. I know it's billed as a horror film, and I guess it is a horror film. But you know, I mean, it's just a violent sort of black comedy thriller, I guess, isn't it? I guess that the stuff that they've kind of thrown in there, the mythology of it kind of makes it a horror, but...
I thought it was going to be standard filler fare, but that extra devil angle, I mean, really adds quite a lot to it. I really enjoyed that kind of stuff. The sort of...
Yeah, that was cool.
Also, I mean, Samara Weaving was kind of amazing. I think she's great in everything she's been in.
Well, I think, as I mentioned, this is the first thing I've actually seen her in.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, she looks like Margot Robbie. Like...
Do you not think she looks like Hugo Weaving?
Little bit. She's got the eyebrows. Wait, is she related to Hugo Weaving?
Yeah. I think it's the niece or something.
Oh, yeah. Uncle. Yeah. She's not his uncle. He's her uncle. She looks so much like Margot Robbie. It's, like, ridiculous. Like... I think they're both in Home and Away as well, right? Yeah. They're both in Home and Away. That's messed up. They got like some laboratory somewhere.
Breeding
the Australian ladies for these major roles.
Yeah. Also, it's cool to see Adam Brody from the OC. I always kind of felt like he was a talented dude. I don't know what happened to him.
He's a guy that I kind of just, I always think, I recognize him. What's he in? But he is in loads of stuff.
Is he? I kind of feel like he did but, the OC.
So he's anyway. In Scream. Just having a look now. He's in Scream 4.
Is he?
Yeah. He's in like loads of stuff like Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Oh, he's in The Ring as he's in The Ring as Male Teen 1. He's in American Pie 2 as he's in American Pie 2 as high school guy.
Oh yeah.
but yeah, I never watched the OC, so you know.
Yeah.
I'm too cool for that, mate. You know what I mean? He's also in Shazam this year.
That's cool. He sounds like he's having a bit of a comeback. Andy McDowell as well. Yeah. I don't know where she's been since 90s.
Four weddings. Yeah, exactly. Andy McDowell. How old would you say she is? Just have a little guess, Luke Condor.
55? No, younger than that. 52.
Jesus. 61.
Is she really? Wow.
Got a bit of dollar, hasn't she? That's why she's managed to keep looking young and fresh.
Yeah, I mean, the cast in it, there's tons of them. So Mark O'Brien is Alex Ledomas. So there's the family. There's the Ledomas family.
Yeah, so Ledomas family, they're obviously very well off. their family are like a gaming dynasty empire. You know, they've made a lot of money from board games and stuff. And they're all very, yeah. very eccentric, pretty much.
Very
well, the close family,
rich.
At least.
The whole thing is like the rich are different to the poor people. And Samara Weaving is kind of like the poor person who's coming to marry into this family. So she's got like a... she doesn't think she's as good as these people, maybe. She doesn't feel like she's as worthy.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I guess if she wants to blend in as well as possible.
There's a bit of controversy as well because I think they've only been together for something like 18 months, haven't they?
Yeah.
So I think her family, the family of the guy she's marrying are a bit like maybe she's a gold digger.
Yeah.
Or, you know, she's just not being very genuine in her actions of marrying their sons. So obviously, yeah, but they're all very protective and strange, and there's like an old aunt who looks actually terrifying. She looks like Zool grown up old.
Gozer.
Gozer, that's it, not yeah. Zool. She looks like Gozer, but like as an old lady. That's Gozer, what she looks like 35 years later.
It's spot on, yeah. I mean, who else we got? Okay, let's hear him. Mark O'Brien is Alex Dermas. He's the
husband.
He's the dad, the husband of the girl one.
So Mark O'Brien is Alex Lomas, is Grace's husband. Is that what you said?
He's like the main guy then, right?
Okay. He's not the main guy. So Grace's husband, he obviously gets married, and then there's when things kick off, he's essentially like the outsider from it. He knows what's happening, but he kind of wants to keep Grace protected from everything. And then everyone's kind of... more of this family are like more involved than others. Others kind of like believe it. Others have never been involved. Others are kind of like trying to maintain the ritual, I guess. Some more so than others. So yeah, there's a lot of conflicting ideas within the family as well. Some are a bit incompetent as well. We've got a couple.
Yeah, there's a guy. Well, the daughter and who's got a coke problem, I think. A drug problem, and then her husband. Who doesn't seem to fit in with family, doesn't seem to understand the traditions as well as they do either. And there's like some great characters. There's the butler. Can't remember what his name is, but he was really funny, I thought. There's like three maids and there's some kids.
Yeah.
There's tons of characters rocking around in this house.
So essentially it is pretty much a one location.
Movie, but it
takes place in a house and the grounds around it. A big sort of like country estate house in, I'm assuming it's in America.
Yeah, it's got to be.
So essentially the premise is that to initiate new people who marry into the family, they sort of pick a card out of this box that will tell them what game they need to play. And, you know, sometimes it could be chess, sometimes it can be name another game. Tomb Raider. Sometimes it can be like that. But there is a card, which is hide and seek. Now, when that card is pulled, we're made to believe, mainly from like the opening sequence gives us a flashback to a time when two of the brothers were very young, and there's a sort of a game of hide and seek happening while they're sort of hiding in the cupboard. And so when hide and seek happens, essentially all the rest of the family have to hunt down and kill the person who's just wed into the family.
Yeah.
Because why wouldn't you?
Exactly, yeah. So there's a little prologue with that one guy getting moided or sacrificed, so we don't really see what happens to him. And then it goes to 30 years later. 30 years later. Alex and Samara Weaving's character, Grace, are going to get married. He's been away from the family for a little while. They don't know where he's been. This is them bringing him back into the family. And they all seem a bit stuffy. Back and forth. They seem a bit stuffy. They seem like they've got their own like weird ways, and Samara Weaving's trying to find a way. There's like an aunt who, like you said, Goza, doesn't like her at all. Didn't seem to take to her at all. He just seems to pop up in certain places. But the wedding goes. The wedding goes ahead.
Just pop.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the wedding goes ahead. It's a bit weird because before the wedding, they kind of like give each other like a pep talk, don't they? Before you get married, almost trying to. So we get a little bit of a backstory about like obviously the family, and that they're all, I don't know, they all kind of seem like they all hate each other, but they're sort of, they're linked by this secret, I guess, that needs to keep the family together and the family going.
Yeah. Why don't they just not do it? Why don't they just not get married anymore?
Yeah, it's true. I was kind of thinking that. But I think it maybe is explained a little bit, but I don't know if it's explained in a way that is in any way believable.
Yeah.
So the wedding happens. It's quite a small, despite the fact it's in this massive house, it's quite a small wedding. There doesn't seem to be loads and loads of people around. It seems to be quite a family affair. No one from Grace's family is there, which is because she grew up she was like an orphan growing up in foster homes. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. That sounds about right.
Yeah. So obviously there's like his alcoholic brother, Daniel. There's like a snobbish wife called Charity. Obviously Emily, as you mentioned before, the drug addicted sister. There's a husband, and there's quite a lot. Yeah, there's loads of people because obviously you need fodder, I guess, for this. Yeah. Although I say you need fodder, but this wasn't quite as like relentlessly gory and violent as I expected it to possibly be.
It has points.
Sure, there's loads, but it wasn't quite as relentlessly like I expected a lot more. I mean, you get quite this iconic image on the poster, which is the bride with a shotgun and the shell sort of draped across her like that. That is pretty much she looks like that for what, about 10 minutes in the film?
Yeah.
Before she finds out that the bullets are just for display only. I kind of wanted her to have that gun and to start either fucking people up or...
She kind of does at the end, but not with a gun. I think it never really gets to that point. I think she punches a little kid at some point.
She punches a little kid, but, he shoots her in the hand.
Yeah.
So it's the best way to do it. So, yeah. Basically, when the clock strikes midnight, they all get together in this sort of main room, this like gaming room where there's various games all around the edge of the
thing, and they pull as well, I think.
Oh, loads of weapons on the wall. Yeah. So they draw a card from this like mysterious, weird wooden box, which has obviously got some sort of, not curse, but links to.
Yeah. So their great grandfather, Victor Lodomus, made a deal with a man named LeBeo. And it's like, if they play that game, whenever someone gets married, then their family will be super wealthy and they'll build their gaming empire, and they've stuck to that, and that's how they've made their wealth. And tonight they're going to play it again.
Why so specific? Why so specific? It's almost like,
yeah,
why such a specific
I like that Faustian tale aspect. It's cool. It kind of elevated this film, I think, to other like killer game. This seems to make it a little bit different.
I mean, it was a welcome sort of addition to what was essentially like a path that was been well well trodden, I guess. And
yeah, you say that, but I'm trying to think. I can't think of many films that did it. Well, it must be.
Well, I guess
You're Next. I guess maybe.
You're Next. What else? I guess it kind of very loosely is.
Get Out. I guess a little bit. It's got a bit of that.
Yeah, but I guess it's very loosely Battle Royale and Hunger Games in a way, isn't it? Loosely, yeah. On a much smaller scale.
Got a bit of a Purge element to it as well.
Yeah, yeah, there's definitely some Purge elements to it. Weird how this film was went completely under the radar in terms of its violence, but Joker was...
Very
strange.
So, Grace pulls a card from the box, and it says, hide and seek, and... She doesn't seem to realize. She thinks it's just a game of hide and seek, and she's, like I said, like I think every line or whatever, every little quip or emotional face that Samara Weaving pulls, it just seems to be note perfect. I just think she's really talented for this kind of thing. And if she runs away, goes to hide in the dumbwaiter, I think, at some point. And then while she's doing that, the rest of the family give her like 100 seconds, and they start to tool up. They start to arm themselves with guns and knives and shotguns and whatever else.
Yep.
And then they go out to try and hunt her.
What I find strange is that Grace isn't given any sort of warning as to what happened. She literally just thinks she's playing hide and seek. She's told, even her husband doesn't explain to her.
Maybe that's the rules. I don't know.
What happens as she goes off. He does get away and goes and finds her and then explains to her.
Yeah, but game, you should tell someone the rules beforehand.
Yeah, exactly. But so basically, what it seems like is, unless he'd done that, they get an immediate sort of advantage because they could just walk up to her and pop a cap in her ass, and that'd be it.
Yeah.
But what convinced? Obviously, Grace doesn't really believe it essentially until she sees Emily accidentally kill one of the maids by just shooting her in the head with a shotgun.
Well, that becomes like a running joke as well. All the maids get accidentally killed.
Yeah, and when they do, one of the members of the family goes, "That was my favorite one."
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, that's where the violence kind of sort of erupts, and Grace, when she sees that, that kind of confirms to her, this shit's getting real. I mean, unfortunate, isn't it? Having a lovely wedding day, and now you've got to fight for your life.
Yeah. Go on, sorry.
So Alex has the role of sort of explaining it to her and sort of explaining the rules and explaining why his family do this and why they had to do it and why he couldn't get out of it, all that stuff. And immediately when he started doing that, I honestly immediately thought, something ain't right about him. He's going to turn out to be a bastard.
Yeah. Yeah, the bastard senses tingling.
I got the bastard senses tingling. But as time went on, I thought, actually, maybe not. Maybe he is a genuine thing. But I thought, can't he just run out with her, just take her off? They do a lot in this story where they kind of have him elsewhere, either chained up or knocked out, or so that he can't come and help, which I think was a bit of a stretch at times. So basically the family think they need to kill her before dawn in order for the ritual to be complete,
and you'll say
they don't kill her,
they die. That's the whole thing, right? If they don't kill
her, they die. I think is essentially what they think.
Because did it happen before or something, or how did it? It's weird. I guess they don't know. I guess that's the whole thing. They just have to have faith that they will die if they don't do it. By the way, so I watched I watched this a few weeks before it came out, and I think I watched an early cut of it because there were bits where sound just wasn't where I thought sound should be. There's a guy playing piano at one point, and he's tickling the keys, and there's no sound. So it's okay, that's weird. And also, there's some scenes where it just seemed like the editing wasn't quite complete. So I don't know if I couldn't tell if some of the bits around here, some of the jokes weren't landing, and I was like, oh, is this because it's just a first edit sort of thing? I kind of felt like it dampened the experience a little bit, but. So maybe it was a bit zingier for you. I don't know. It felt like it dragged a little bit for me, this element, this part.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have that problem. I don't know how zingy it was for me. I mean, there are some bits were, quite amusing. Other bits, not so much. I think what happened with me with this is that I was completely sold by the concept and really, really into it. But then I kind of like fell out of love with it real quick. It was strange. One where I was like, let's do this. But then it got to a point and I was like, I don't know what it was. Something just didn't quite hit the nail on the head for me. It was because from the trailer and what I heard about the film, I kind of did expect it to be a bit relentless in terms of violence. And I think it kind of tiptoed around stuff for a long time, I felt.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking...
Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, I just kind of wish it was zingier and funnier. Like, I kind of felt like if the jokes were more on point, or if like the editing was a bit like sharper, it would have, because it felt like it was kind of stuttering at times. Like the first like half an hour, I felt like was really kind of well done, and it just started to sputter out a little bit. And it found its feet again when Grace gets outside of the house. Oh no, when she's like nearly escaping, and there's a butler singing. I kind of go into that bit.
I mean, she is a really great leading lady. I think she was. You were like really rooting for her. You really sort of felt her plight and sort of all these different emotions she was feeling, because obviously she was it was her wedding day and she was in love with somebody, and now all this shit was going down. I believed it, mate. All right. I believed it.
Yeah.
At some point I think another maid gets killed by like the dumb waiter elevator.
Yeah.
Which I think Grace accidentally uses, I think.
Yeah, she turned it on. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. And then there's Daniel. So he's the sort of drunk brother. But he clearly isn't fully on board with what the family are doing either, to the point where he catches her in the study at one point and basically just says, look, I'm going to give you 10 seconds to go and then I'll call them. So he's not trying to kill her at all. He's just having a drink.
Yeah.
Which he does, and the rest of the family always seem to be like all together following behind. Like, you'd split up, wouldn't you, go to find someone, unless they're worried about like accidentally killing each other.
Yeah. Friendly fire.
Yeah. So Alex at this point is like using the security to unlock different doors of the house. But while he's trying to do that, his family sort of discover him and realize what he's doing. So they like restrain him. Do they like handcuff him?
They handcuff him to a bed.
The room.
Yeah.
And this is when we get quite an iconic moment where Grace rips up her ball gown. Ball gown? Wedding dress. Ball gown. Same thing, mate. Same thing. Going to the ball, you're getting married. Don't care. She rips up her dress, obviously. She's got Converse on. Shotgun. And the shells around her. And I was thinking, people are going to be going mental for that on Halloween, aren't they?
Yeah. But like you said, like, it's not... how does it work? I mean, she buys some blanks.
Yeah, so basically, when she's in the kitchen trying to get out of a certain room, the butler's singing some classical music, obviously she tries to get away from him. It's quite tense in there where he keeps hearing things, but she tries to get out and she aims the gun at him, and then obviously he knows that those bullets aren't going to hurt him. But then she throws a load of scald not water in his face.
Yeah, it's always the go-to, that scald not water in the face. She escapes the house, climbs through a fence, I think. Did she cut a hand here or cuts herself here? I can't really remember. But it's difficult. Right. Can't just escape out the front door. It's difficult.
Because obviously he's aware of what's happening. He's kind of been listening in. Knows that they're all trying to kill her, and he uses a gun, shoots her in the hand, actually makes a hole in her hand, and then she gives him a sucker punch. Punches him straight.
You just cut out, by the way, for about 2 minutes then. What were you saying?
Well, 2 whole minutes.
You started talking, and then it just went boop, 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 and then you came back, and he punched him in the face.
Him in the face. So basically I said, she goes to the barn, and a little boy, like, basically has been working out what's been going on, realizes what they're all trying to kill her, and he shoots her in the hand, and she sucker punches him, bang, right in the Swede.
Yeah, okay, let me get my head around what's happening here. So at some point she gets in the car, right? Is that before the hand or after the hand?
Yeah, so after the hand, then she falls into like this pit.
Yeah, okay, so there's like carved up goats and stuff. So are they like sacrificing people as well?
Yeah, but
just goats.
There are human bodies down there as well. So they're obviously previous victims of the same sort of thing. And
really?
I guess
how many are they getting married to? How often are they marrying people and killing them? Because like they made out that was like a really rare card
to
pick.
Yeah, but they're like skeletons, so you know, maybe it's happened over the course of quite a really long time.
Yeah, it gets like blood all over it, so I kind of figured like last week.
Yeah, and there's a pretty gruesome bit where she climbs out of that pit, and there's a nail sort of jutting out of the wood at the top, and she puts the whole of her hand like straight over the top of it.
Yeah,
which is pretty gruesome. But then she rips up bits of her dress and uses them as bandages. She's pretty fucked up already, you know what I mean? Yeah. I feel like it's early days in this, and she's already like been shot in the hand.
Yeah, yeah. So then she gets in the car, and then she drives away, right? And then, I mean, all this kind of flies by fairly quickly. There's a bit. It feels like she's getting away, but then she makes a phone call to it's like a human sat nav sort of service that I guess. rich humans have that I've never. Do we have this in real life? I don't know.
I don't know. But yeah, it's like a vehicle assistance company. But then it says, well, this car was just reported stolen, so we're going to have to disable it. So they disable it remotely. And then the butler comes and manages to tranquilize and capture her. And then we get, I mean, this is a bit ridiculous. He kind of FaceTimes the whole family, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, bloody caught her, don't worry about it. But then she's obviously waking up in the back
and they're like
moving towards him.
Trying to tell him about.
And then
they're
trying to tell
singing
him
again or something. I kind of feel like he's singing.
I think he's singing again, yeah. So she causes him to crash the car and he actually dies during the crash.
Yeah.
But she manages to get out. But Daniel is there having a drink just in the woods. And he knocks her out and captures it. But again, there's so many different things and stuff where I feel like people act a certain way and then in a few scenes down the line they act the opposite way.
Yeah.
I just feel like, why would you not act like that the first time, you know?
Yeah.
There's a bit inconsistency with some of these characters, especially with like Andy McDowell's character as well, who seems to sort of be someone that's
on her side.
Just a liker, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you kind of think maybe there's something into about that, but then she kind of becomes like one of the worst ones.
Yeah.
Later on. And
yeah. Well, they tie her up, don't they? And they go, like, right, now it's time to do the sacrificing part of the night. We've had a buffet. Now it's time for this ritual human sacrifice.
So they all, like, drink for some wine. It's weird because, like, the whole premise is, right, you've got to hunt her down and kill her.
Yeah.
But don't actually kill her because you've got to bring her back here to kill
her. That's a good point. You've got to maim her, I think, was the whole
thing.
You've got
to maim her. Yeah, but that's pressure, isn't it? If she wants to kill you so she can survive, but you just got to maim her. I think I'd panic. I'd panic and kill her. And then what happens?
Yeah, then you're screwed. You're going to die. But I mean, maybe that's why they don't tell the rules at the start. Like, it's too difficult. Too difficult.
That I mean. Sorry.
Okay, so they all start to cough up blood and stuff, I think, right?
So basically they all cough up blood except for Daniel, who like poison the wine non-lethally. I think it just makes everyone a bit sick. But he does basically say, you lot deserve to die, which is, this is strange. So he lets her go in the first instance.
Yeah.
Later on he knocks her out and captures her, but then he lets her go. So are we meant to feel that he's like his ideas are conflicting, or he's
so
inconsistent?
The reason he captured her before at the end, because his dad was watching, I think. He like knew his dad was watching.
I've got you. He knew his dad was there. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah. He's like, and the dad's like, I was beginning to not know what side you were on, or whatever he says. But anyway, so they all start to cough up blood maybe or something, and then he lets her go. But then he gets killed for some reason. I can't remember why. He gets shot in the neck or something.
Dad?
Oh, it's his wife. His wife, Charity, who's like been, apparently she came from a similar position to him.
That's right.
To her,
even.
But she's like gone all the way in. Like, she's like, I ain't going back to her going poor.
She basically wants to, like, that, she's all the way in. She doesn't want it all to be ruined and go back to being poor or anything like that. So,
she shoots Adam Brody. She shoots his neck off. And then, he's dying. And then I think, how does she kill Grace? What happens to Grace?
So basically, Grace starts a fire now. Sorry.
Yeah.
Grace starts a fire, and the house obviously is starting to burn down. But then Andy McDowell gets into a fight with Grace. And Grace like beats her to death with like the box where the cards were like sort of taken from.
Yeah.
Caves are sculling. And obviously it looks pretty bad for her because Alex arrives and realizes what's happened. So he immediately walks in and goes, right, first of all, you killed my mum. And then he also sees that Daniel's dead. And because he hasn't got any context, I guess he assumes she's dead as well. But then this is where we start to see the mask begin to slip for Alex. So I say the mask begin to slip. I don't think he was all in from the start. But I think now he's starting to realize, well, I've got no choice. You know, I think he even says to Grace at one point, he's like, you're not going to want to be with me at the end of this, are you? You know what I mean?
Yes, if we both live through this. Would. Yeah.
So as soon as he realized that, he kind of thinks, well, fuck it, you know.
Yeah, but there's no way he could be with her because either he kills her and they live or he doesn't kill her and they die.
And they die, yeah. Jesus Christ.
He's in a pickle, yeah. So he captures it.
They capture her again, and it does get a bit silly now because it's almost like, how many more times can she like really get away? This I think this scene as well is reaching a little bit because it's proper like one of the trying to stab her. I think isn't Alex trying to stab her like that, but she stabs him. She does something, and he stabs her in the shoulder, and then she manages to.
Just like that, something, right?
Yeah, it's a bit weird. This bit. It was almost like, right, well, she's dead. They've got her pinned down. They're ready to stab her. She's dead. But somehow she still makes it out. And I wasn't fully sold by that. It almost felt like it needed an intervention from something else or someone. Because I feel like the previous scene, she got away in almost exactly the same way.
I think as soon as you start repeating scenes, it starts to like this. Something doesn't seem to sit right. But so she gets in the shoulder, and I think just in time, because I think the sun's starting to rise, which is when the deadline was. And then they were like, oh, nothing's going to happen. And I kind of felt like, oh, okay, nothing's going to happen. The thing would be like, they've just been killing people for no reason. But then Goza tries to kill her with the axe, and then explodes.
Yeah, starts running towards her.
Explodes in like a mist of blood. And then they all start popping. Like cherries in a microwave or something. And then there's a cool little bit where you see the devil guy, sort of ghostly apparition of him winking at her. Great performance, lass. You're done.
Yeah. She's literally covered in blood because they've all exploded around her.
Yeah.
The house continues to burn and she sort of leaves and smoking a fag. She sits on the... She sits down as the house is burning down and first responders arrive.
Yeah.
And someone say, what the hell happened? Or are you all right? And she just shrugs and sort of says, in-laws.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. It's a fun little way to end. I was going to tell you, maybe I shouldn't tell you. No, on a podcast. I don't know. So Kat's parents had a similar... had like a bust-up with Kat's brother's family. They had like a little meetup the other day and then he got into a scrap.
Like a literal scrap.
Yeah.
So like Jesus.
Apparently started out, I don't want to go into detail, but like just started out of nowhere. About all the brothers, Kat's brothers and dad started fighting with her brother's girlfriend's brothers and dad.
Like, oh my
this,
God,
in this pub started like throwing fists and stuff.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I feel a little bit gutted. Like I wanted to. I wish I would have witnessed that.
Yeah.
Not that I condone violence, but you know what I mean.
No. Okay, man. I've got some trivia for you.
Oh, very nice.
Again, it's quite difficult with newer films to get some trivia. So you kind of have to do your best. Let's score me for my trivia, how I do out of giving the trivia. Okay, number one. How many different wedding dresses were created for the film?
Let's say 15.
Mate, 17. You know your wedding dresses. You were like, oh, that's a different dress. I could tell the tailoring is slightly different there.
100%.
What was the body count of the film? Number two, what was the body count?
Let's say 13.
Mate, you're doing well. 15. Charles, Clara, Tina, Dora, Stevens, Daniel, Becky, Aunt Helene, Fitch, Charity, Emily, Gabe, Georgie, Tony, and Alex.
I suppose all the little kids died as well, yeah.
Yeah. That's
off screen. Off screen.
Yeah, you can't have them burned on screen. Number three. There's six methods of murder used in the film that were borrowed from what board game?
Cluedo?
I was just thinking about that question. What other board game could it be? Like, there's no board games where you kill people. Well, maybe not.
Yeah.
So, six methods of murder available in various editions of the board game Clue are used in the film. The pepperbox revolver is used by Emily and her son Georgie. Grace strangles the butler Stevens. The ceremonial wine is poisoned. Aunt Helene decapitates a maid with an axe. A dagger is used for sacrificial ceremony. And Grace hits Tony in the face with a lantern, which is a bit like a candlestick. Number four.
Oh, yeah.
You're never going to get this one. What big sitcom did Samara Weaving... Wait, what big soap opera did Samara Weaving star in before Ready or Not?
Away and Home. Home and Away.
Neighbours. It was Home and Away.
Oh, it's Neighbours.
Neighbours. Yep. Pick your nose and eat some quavers. Something like that.
Pick your nose and taste the flavours.
okay, number five. Name game. Man plays a game where he chases people around and paints them up in red paint, or he doesn't.
Ready? ready or not?
Yeah, ready or not.
Yeah. Great.
Okay. So, man, we need to rate the film. I haven't even thought about this. What did I... I don't know. What are you going to go with?
In terms of rating, after I watched it, I was pretty, you know, thinking, yeah, that's pretty good, you know. But as I've sort of thought about it some more, especially in the lead up to this podcast, I've kind of realised I'm one massively, massively into it. I enjoyed it during the runtime, you know. But after that, I didn't really think about it that much more. Good way to kill 90 minutes.
Yeah.
If you enjoy films like that, but I'd probably give it no more than a C-.
I'm going to give it a C+. I think it's a lot of fun. I think I would like to watch it again at some point in the future. I definitely kind of feel like I need to watch this along with Your Next. I remember really liking Your Next. That was a long time ago.
I haven't even actually seen Your Next, so maybe I need to watch it at some point.
I think it didn't have anywhere near as much budget as this. Like, it seems way lower budget. But I kind of I know that the... I seem to remember the ending... It all came together really quite well in that film.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, C+, I think it's good. I think people will get a lot out of it. I think it's perfect. Like you said, some motivation seemed a bit janky. But I did see like a not finished edit of the film. So
yeah,
it might be better next time. I don't know.
But then it shouldn't have been in a bloody cinema, should it? If it wanted to finish edit of the film. Jesus!
Well, it was the Scream Unseen thing, wasn't it? I think they've got a... Hack him in somehow. Okay, man. So what are we doing next week?
I mean, that is a good question. I know we spoke about, because obviously we've done a lot of new releases, haven't we?
Yeah.
Sort of in a row, probably like four or five episodes.
At a time in a row.
So
yeah.
At a time in a row. So I know we discussed a couple of films that perhaps we could watch. One was Martyrs.
Oh, man, yeah.
One was Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
I think so. Maybe what we'll do... struggle to find a version of Martyrs. Maybe take a look and see if there's a one we can watch.
We'll have a look, or we can do In the Tall Grass, which is out this week.
Yeah.
What do you fancy? Maybe what we'll do is that's three options. Maybe we'll add another option. We'll put it in the Horror Hangout Board of Advisors Facebook group. Maybe we'll put it on Twitter as well, and we'll get a little voting. Yeah. We'll get a little voting McVoterson on.
Yeah.
And then we'll see what is the most popular choice. And then we'll watch that, all right? We'll let the people decide, all right?
Sounds good. That's democracy. Okay, so this show is brought to you by Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com. Become a patron over at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Thanks to Kovacs Cameron for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, consider giving us a rating review on iTunes and remember to hit subscribe. Thanks to the guys in the Facebook group, Horror Hangout Pod Advisors. Thanks to people who go onto the web store and buy Horror Hangout t-shirts. Thanks to everyone at home in their pants currently having thumbs up chips their bum.
Come on. I was going to say chips and dip, but thumbs up their bum. Yeah. I mean, it's quite late now, so it's probably thumbs up your bum time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's hit that time. Okay, so thanks to my co-host Ben for being right our dude.
Thank you very much, Luke, as always. What a pleasure it's been.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.